Today is December 20th, 2014, and this is the last Mobile Views podcast for this calendar year, 2014, the Mobile Views podcast number 105. I'm Todd Ogasa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall, and today we've got a bunch of, what do you call this? It's not exactly a rant. Wish list?
These are items that quite honestly just perplex me. Things that in 2014 and near 2015 should not be as problematic as they are, or should not have taken as long as they did to show up. So basically, we're calling out the tech world and saying, why doesn't this exist, or why did we just get this recently?
Okay, why don't you start it off?
Well, the first thing that came to mind when I was thinking about this was video sharing from device to device. Things like, because this year we had, obviously, Chromecast got a bit more popular, AirPlay had been around, the Fire Sticks came out this year, and these are things that do a very simple thing at their essence. They take video and audio from one device and just send it over a wireless network to another. And we've had wireless networks now since, you know, around 2000, 2001 is when they entered the consumer space. And why did this take so long? I mean, we've had computers hooked up to TVs since about 2004, 2005 when Windows Media Center Edition came out. So I'm glad that we have it now, but it does seem like it took really long, a long time to show up.
Yeah, well, you know, two things I wanted to add. Then one, the Amazon Fire Stick, which I bought on sale that first day when it was available for $20, does not. Well, at least I don't think it casts videos like AirPlay and Chromecast. It's more like a Roku, so it's like more like a Roku stick, and it's a independent little doodad, has its own little remote control, or you can use an Android device as a remote control. And it supports gaming, although I haven't tried any of the games, and as well as the usual suspects like Netflix and that sort of thing. But more importantly for me, the one thing it supports that Apple TV doesn't support is, of course, Amazon Instant Prime. So the other thing is, you know, it's just one of those, one more technology that Microsoft was the leader in and could just not figure out, right? Because, I mean, we all had Media Center in our Windows XP devices, or most of us did. And we know, you and I know friends who were, what can I say, they loved it. It was their main entertainment center for all kinds of stuff. They, like you said, they cast it under TV. Most people either A, didn't know about it, or B, knew about it and couldn't get it to work. I'm in that latter group.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft had the opportunity there, and this is related, but you know, you could do basically the, you know, online guide, all of those things that, you know, TV integration, all of that stuff with Media Center PC, and they just never figured out how to make it catch on. Over a decade ago, things that we don't have now. Apple TV doesn't have that.
Yeah,
you know, Fire Sticks can't do broadcast. You can't just you know, throw in a TV tuner onto your Apple TV and get over-the-air channels or something like that, which you could have done with a Windows PC Media Center Edition. So it is one of those things that we lost technology because Microsoft couldn't figure out how to make money off of it.
Yeah, and I even bought a Hophog board or two to throw into my PC so I could actually receive TV in my PC.
Yeah, I did that back in 2009. I built a little digital picture frame out of an old tablet PC of mine that I never really fully fleshed out, but I had it working, and it used one of those little cards. And yeah, it's really frustrating how Microsoft – we could do a whole talk about why Microsoft has frustrated us and saddened us over years.
Hey, how do you think they feel? I mean, you just said tablet PC, watch – phone, you know, Media Center. I mean, all of these things, if they didn't pioneer, they certainly were the first to do in a big way and totally failed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, people talk about Microsoft copying Apple. I'm pretty sure Apple just sat back and said, what's Microsoft doing this year? Let's wait about 5 years and do it better.
Yeah.
And that's their revenue generation. You know, iPhone came out about 5 years after Pocket PC Phone Edition.
Yep.
Apple TV came out about 5 years after Media Center PC. Apple Watch is going to come out about 8 years after the Spot Watch, but that's because they had the 2-year delay in there in production.
Don't make me cry about my Spot Watch again.
Yeah. We won't end the year on a podcast of Todd just weeping while I have to do the sign off.
Okay, next up, something we're going to actually dedicate an entire episode to, and that's backup and, you know, system data safety and all that kind of stuff, because a good friend of mine recently lost some really important data despite what I think were pretty good backup schemes. And it just goes to show, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men and hacking and hackers sometimes go awry. But yeah, what is the deal with that, John?
My big complaint with this is that, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, actually it was about 5 years ago, I switched to a Mac. And about 2 years later, so 3 years ago, I bought an Apple Time Capsule for my office and one for my home. And when I did that, I went into Time Machine on a Mac, and with three clicks, I had automated backup. And it backed up, you know, it still backed up. I just looked. The last backup to the Time Capsule was at 12:10 today, and we're recording this around 12:47. So, you know, it's doing its thing. I've never had it really give me much of a problem, and it's completely automated. Why isn't that on Windows? What would stop that from happening on Windows?
Well, Microsoft, to defend them, I guess. Microsoft has had something called Microsoft Backup on Windows forever. The only little minor kind of problem that I have is it's never actually worked for me.
Yeah, that's kind of a major problem when it comes to data safety. But yeah, I remember Microsoft Backup from, you know, the floppy disk days and running backups on floppies. And I guess there are some third-party solutions for Microsoft that work pretty well. CrashPlan comes to mind. That's what I use for cloud backup. Mm-hmm. But it's really weird that with all the emphasis that Microsoft has put on the cloud, that they believe that you can still get away with just backing up your files. Everything else on your PC and snapshots and things like that are not part of their plan yet. It's just, okay, throw it all in SkyDrive, or I'm sorry, OneDrive, and that's just fine enough. In fact, I'll give you an example. Last week, I reformatted my MacBook Air and did a fresh install of OS X Yosemite just because I had some issues showing up, and I thought, you know, it's time to just do a fresh install. I've never done a fresh install on this thing. So I did the fresh install and was shocked at all the settings that somehow had been hiding in iCloud. You know, Apple Mail had all of my accounts back ready to go. I didn't have to add new accounts in. It just really shocked me how deeply Apple has integrated some of their backup into iCloud and the like without ever having to touch the Time Capsule system. So, or a Time Machine system. So why can't Microsoft and, you know, other cloud providers do that?
Well, you know, we've had similar questions of Microsoft and for them when we used to be MVPs, where we would ask them things like, oh, I remember, I think in 06, 05, before the iPhone, I remember several of us asking them, why can't we sync our calendar, contacts, and other things directly with Hotmail, which at the time had its own calendar and contacts list. And so, you know, if we could just do that, we wouldn't have to back up. We wouldn't have to restore every time we upgrade the system. It would just, and they would look at us like we're nuts. Like, oh, that's not how things work. Everything backs up to the PC. It's a PC companion.
Yeah. Yeah. This is quickly turning into a Curse You Microsoft podcast.
Yeah, but this is a G-rated podcast, so we won't actually curse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the backup system and even cloud backup took a while to kind of get to where, for example, CrashPlan, like I use, does a very nice job, but I remember the early systems, Carbonite was kind of the first on the ground, and then it came out that they didn't back up all of your stuff. They just backed up what they thought was important.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't back up EXE files, and if you had, you know, self-installing software and things like that, that wouldn't get backed up. And then there was another one that I used for a while. I'm blanking on the name because I hate it so much now that at one point decided they were going to change their pricing scheme. Do you remember? I wish I could remember the name of this cursed company. where, you know, it was basically I had 800 gigabytes backed up to them.
Wow.
And it was a flat rate a year. It was something like, you know, very similar to what I pay for CrashPlan, like around the $40 range a year.
Yeah.
And then they just decided, you know, we're not making enough money. And so my bill would have gone, if I hadn't canceled my account, from $40 a year to something like $300 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, they basically had a mass exodus from their company after that. So it took quite a while to get to something like CrashPlan and some of the other systems that are out there now that do cloud backup
in
an appropriate way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and I have to say, you know, that's kind of similar for me. So I think like... Like a lot of people, you know, I've tried a couple of online backups. None of them really worked for me well. So I just do things manually. You know, things I know I really, really need to have, I have a copy in OneDrive or Google Drive or Dropbox or, you know, or sometimes all three. Just to make sure I have a copy of, you know, whatever it is somewhere. So, yeah, but my Windows is a real mystery. Why they can't get a simple backup working. I don't know. Maybe the unlimited OneDrive will change
things. Well, you'd think it would make a lot of sense for them to partner with. You know, they could make an argument that OneDrive is for your file syncing across multiple devices and accessing things off the internet, and then we're going to partner with blank, whatever company they want, that's going to provide you with cloud backup, snapshot, restore, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah, that just doesn't seem to be in their cards.
Well, you know, they just want you to buy a new PC. They just want you to buy a new PC and restore your documents if you have them backed up somewhere, and they figure you're good to go.
Yeah, Microsoft would like it if the world didn't progress past the year 2002.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't a bad year for them. They were still flat, but they still looked like a, you know, aggressive company at the time. Yeah,
they looked like they might do something.
Yeah. Yeah, XP was pretty well received after SP2, which was around that time frame, I think. And yeah, they still looked like a go-getter at that point. Bill Gates was still CEO, I think. So, yeah, different time.
Yeah. So speaking of cards, my next gripe is, why don't I have an electronic driver's license yet?
Okay, now I don't want why one, can but I go have- ahead.
Well, I'm not saying you should have to have one. Okay. I would... personally find it much easier if I didn't have to carry all of the cards that I carry now. And I don't carry many, but it would just be nice to be able to leave the house with nothing but my phone and a car key or a house key.
Right.
And even then, I could get rid of the house key if I've installed a Bluetooth lock or something like that. So I want to get to the day where all I have to carry with me is my phone.
Hmm.
And I don't know why I can't do that yet.
Yeah. Didn't Ohio or... some other large state in the Midwest recently adopt a smartphone-based driver's license system?
I believe it was Iowa.
Iowa? Okay. Okay. Same letters, almost, you know.
The interesting thing is, you pointed... Yeah, same letters.
Yeah, WH, whatever, right?
Two states over. The thing... Yeah, no big deal. The interesting thing that you had pointed out in our show notes was the concerns about privacy. So tell me a little bit about why you don't want this.
Well, I don't know if it's so much about the privacy aspect of the driver's license. I just don't know how secure it is, not from the point of view of my security, but from the point of view of, you know, somebody just creating bogus credentials on a smartphone, saying he or she is, you know, someone else or... stealing, well, I guess it would be privacy. It would be stealing yours somehow, you know, duplicating it, cloning it. You know, if somebody clones your phone, did they clone your driver's license too? Like, you know, like if you watch Persons of Interest, what I do all the time, they're always cloning phones, right? So, you know, what's the, I don't know, I just, you know, aside from my Starbucks mobile app, I think that's the only card I've replaced on my phone. Everything else is a physical... you know, physical thing that I carry with me. So maybe I'm just old.
Well, I don't know. I personally, my opinion is all of this information, I don't see that a remote driver's license or electronic driver's license would cause any increased chance of having credentials stolen, because all of the information that the government already keeps on me is already on networks that could be broken into. And this is something that I would assume if you showed it to any government agency, they would be able to type in a code and verify it immediately and, you know, check to say, okay, that is the device that's tied to this person. And I figure if it's good enough for online banking, it should be good enough for Starbucks, then it should be good enough for the government.
Yeah, well, you know, and I should say, I don't want to jinx Starbucks, but, you know, they're one of the few companies that hasn't had at least a publicized security issue so far.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to, as I travel this next couple of weeks, of getting Starbucks, since I live about 90 miles away from the nearest Starbucks
right now. Holy cow.
And I have two reports that I have to use in the next 2 weeks. I'm really behind.
Well, you know, speaking of electronics on your phone, though, is the question I posed to you is, what happens if your phone breaks the moment you need to show your driver's license? What happens if you lose your phone and while you're, you know, when the moment you need to show your driver's license?
Well, that would then go back to another question that I've been curious about, and that is, why can't I just, you know, tell the officer who I am and give them a piece of identifying information and like a thumbprint scan, and boom, they could look me up through that. I guess I don't even understand why we have driver's licenses anymore anyway. I don't think they serve the purpose they originally served, now that every cop has a full computer in their cruiser that could look up any piece of information they need to look up.
Yeah. Well, you know, their network fails.
So I guess this is a bigger issue I have with them. That's true.
You know, first responders' networks aren't 100% either. And other people ask for our driver's license or state ID card or whatever on occasion, too, to, you know, provide a secondary identity check for purchases and those sort of things. But, okay. I know a lot of people want it. I'm just a little uncomfortable with it. And then something else I'm a little uncomfortable with is your next topic.
Okay. My next topic is basically, why am I still paying so much for medical care? Why has medical care not kind of become democratized in a sense of doctors basically saying, this is the services I offer and here's my rates for these services? Why do we have this fairly non-transparent system whereby I don't really know what my doctor is charging my insurance company? My insurance company apparently pays a little bit. My doctor says, okay, that's fine. So why can't I just pay those rates directly? I basically would like to see the healthcare industry get a little bit more transparent and the ability to basically purchase medical services like I can purchase pretty much anything else.
Yeah, well, you know, I am not an expert in a medical industrial complex, but I do recall reading a couple of articles about it and how it has evolved, and particularly in this country. And our medical industrial complex is very different from medical care in other countries, even, you know, our relatively close neighbors to the North, Canada. You know, which you could argue is better in some ways and worse in others, but it's better in the sense that most people don't go bankrupt if they have a serious, illness. So I would say that part is better. But no, I have no idea why. I do that. Our medical care system is far different from other countries, which appears to provide better and more economical care. Whether it's the same quality, I don't know. But I remember reading that I think we pay something like 4 times more than almost anybody else.
And this has led to people doing very strange things, you know, basically I forget what the term is that they like to throw around, but basically vacationing for surgery and things you know, going to another country to have a medical procedure.
Yes.
Medical tourism, I think, is the term that is thrown around quite a bit.
I think that is what it's called either, and I have read about that too, and that's quite fascinating, where it's like you would pay $100,000 to some procedure here, and it's $10,000, you know, in some other country, with American trained doctors, and you know what that sort of thing. So if that makes a difference to you, interesting. Now your next one is
very strange. That
the next one you have is near and dear to my heart, not in the same way, because you're talking about fast food and I'm talking about movie theaters. But go ahead, I like this topic.
Okay, so there are certain restaurants now that quite a bit of the pizza chains, some of the sub shop chains, Starbucks has gotten on board with this. They let you do online ordering and then pick it up when you go into the restaurant. Why don't fast food restaurants and, as Tom points out, movie theaters do this? Because it would seem like it would make it more profitable. You'd move the customer through quicker. You'd have less screwed up orders, etc.
Yeah. Now, in defense of this archaic industry, Starbucks is only allowing online orders in one city, right? And that's in Portland.
Yes. But presumably they will not stop in Portland.
Yes, presumably not if it works out fine. But, you know, I can't figure it out either, and especially in movie theaters, where my understanding is the most of their profit comes not from showing the movie, but from selling foods at the concessions that you eat and drink while you're at the movie. I mean, you know, a box of popcorn is like $7 in the theater. It would cost you $1 a bag at home. So they're making quite a bit of profit, and yet their method of selling it to you and getting you in the seats, you know, are at the point where a lot of people abandon it or, you know, sneak in their own food or whatever, just not to go through that process. It's just mind-boggling to me. You know, how they would throw away
profits. The only thing I can figure is that there must be research that shows if you show people exactly how much they will spend for food before they hit the okay button, then they will order less than if you just say, oh, I'd like this, this, and this, and then here's $50. My credit card, and it rings up to $25. You know, here's your $75 bag of popcorn and your $25 drum of Coke.
You know, you may have something there. I mean, it could be a sticker shock if you're standing in line and you have time to think about it, right? Like, wow, this is $58.
You know? But then, you know, there's a local sub chain here in my area that's called Lenny's Subs, and they're based out of Memphis. They do online ordering. $6.25 magically becomes $10 by the time you add everything in that you wanted, etc. And it doesn't seem to impact them as much. It seems like it's okay for that sort of business. So yeah. I don't know what the sticker shock would be. And definitely with companies like McDonald's and Wendy's and some of the large fast food chains, it would just seem like it would make a lot of sense, because I'm sure that they lose a lot of money today from people going, I didn't order this with this, and so they have to remake it. Or something like that, where it would be a lot easier to reduce employee error if this was all just punched in by the consumer while they were even just waiting in line. Instead of going up to a speaker, why can't I go up to the speaker? The speaker shows me a little number. I punch that in on the McDonald's app, and then it goes, what do you want? I hit a few buttons, and magically it goes to the restaurant, and by the time I get to the first window, it's being made. That would even seem easier than trying to hear some garbled voice over an intercom by a stressed out teenager.
Yeah, well, you know, the legacy businesses have a lot of thinking to do in the modern world, I think. And until they see somebody else do it and then hit them economically, you know, basically steal their business, I don't think they're going to do it. You know, so the movie theater chain thing, I don't understand why they do business the way they do when they know where most of the profits come from. It's just mind-boggling that you would do that. I mean, all they would have to do is make one line in the concession thing, right? And then so it instead of people waiting in slow lines and having or being in a fast line, everybody gets optimal service. But no, they won't do that. Can't figure it out. Disney figured that out years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, my rant. And I think you've got a rant too, but my rants are all just there's no simple solutions, but it is quite perplexing that they exist or that they've taken so long.
So I actually have two rants, and they're kind of related. So rant number one is Windows 8 came out, what, 3 years ago now? And Windows 10 is due out sometime in 2015, and still no Microsoft Office for Windows Touch or whatever you want to call it, touch enabled. What the heck is going on with Microsoft that they can't? They've produced a pretty nice looking iPad version. I don't know what happened to their own.
Yeah, version. I don't know if this is I don't know if this is they don't have the resources, the people that they want to devote to it, or if there are just people at Microsoft that it wouldn't surprise me if 10 years from now we read an article that says at this point in Microsoft's history, there were people who were vehemently against Metro or whatever you want to call it, and people who were vehemently for it.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be whatever group you were in. If your director hated it, then you made no progress on moving over to it. And if your director loved it, then you went to it. And the Office team, it wouldn't surprise me. Office, with the exception of adding the ribbon in Office 2007, Office has basically remained the exact same way it looked since 1995.
This is true.
And I don't think they're the kind of group that's like, let's change it. And if you think about where they make all their money, most of the people that use Office were trained to use Office. It was secretaries, right, people who had to go to training to learn how to use this and that. And if you change a menu item on those folks, you're going to hear about it from your corporate customers going, well, we just had to retrain 8,000 secretaries because you moved this dialog box from here to somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
So they might have a big phobia of changing anything in the core programs, even creating new programs. Because look at right now when you talk to someone who uses Windows 8 and you say open Internet Explorer. Well, what Internet Explorer are you referring to? Are you referring to the touch version or the desktop version? It's a confusing kind of system. And I can't imagine trying to refer to people who are barely computer literate. Oh, open up this version of Excel when you want it to look pretty, but open up this version of Excel when you want to actually do work.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever told you this story before, but it's worth telling again because I like it. So I had an aunt who passed away a few years ago, but when she was about 90 years old, she was helping out at a local, I think it was a doctor's office or health clinic or something, a couple hours a week. And I remember I went to go visit her one day, and she says, Todd, and remember, she's 90 years old at this point. She says, Todd, you know, this ribbon thing on the new Microsoft Word 2007, I don't like it. Don't you do stuff at Microsoft? Tell them I don't like it. She says, it's confusing.
There's a picture that floats around the internet from time to time that's I think it's originated on parentsshouldn'ttext.com or something like that, where a mom is texting her son going, I don't like the picture on the Google today. Why did you change it? And he goes, I don't control that. And she goes, you don't run the Google? And he goes, if I ran the Google, why would I drive a 1984 Honda?
but at any rate, the ribbon was... You know, it's not very popular. I guess if you grew up on it, it's okay. But for people switch from it, nobody liked it that I know of.
No, I barely put up with it. And thankfully, in the Mac version of Office, it hasn't taken over as well as it has on the Windows version.
Yeah. So
I will be interested to see what the next version of Mac Office looks like when it appears apparently next year.
Yeah, and you know, my final gripe, not so much of, you know, why did it take so long to get here, but Why did they do it at all is this, you know, whole new user interface, less user interface where you have no clue on how to do anything anymore. Unless somebody tells you, you know, you have to wildly gesticulate on your screen or to get charms up or something like that. And it's not just Windows, it's iOS. It's not so much OS X, but definitely iOS, Android, and Windows 8, Windows 10, it's driving me nuts. There is nothing wrong with a menu.
I downloaded an app about an hour ago, and I can't figure out how to get into the settings for it. It's this exact problem. It looks very pretty. It's a very pretty app, but I can't figure out how to get into the settings so that I can hook it up to an account that I have online so that I can unlock some features on it.
Yeah.
And, which, you know, yeah.
And it's not just platforms. Like you said, it's apps too. In fact, just this morning, I got a Starbucks gift card, so I wanted to add it to my mobile app. And for the life of me, I could not figure out how. I had to go online and search for instructions on how to get to the screen that lets me add a new Starbucks gift card to the Starbucks app. And that, to me, is ridiculous design when you have to look up something like that. The old Starbucks app was very friendly. It was easy to find stuff. It was easy to learn how to do things. The new one, it may be prettier, but it certainly is not easier.
That reminds me, I have a Starbucks gift card somewhere around here I have to add to my account, and now I'm thinking I better do it on the PC before I go traveling.
Oh, I can tell you how to do it. So what you do is you open up your Starbucks app, you go to a card, touch the card, and swipe it to the right. So basically swipe left to right, and then an add card window will appear. There is no clue anywhere that that's how it is. I had to go search for it on the interwebs to learn how to do that. Yeah, and I've done it before. I just can't remember it. You know, I don't do it very often.
Yep, that is a valid thing. I don't understand why UIs have gotten to in this kind of rampant desire to get cleaner and look slicker.
Right.
They get more useless.
Exactly. And more unapproachable. It's almost like, you know, and I have to say, I grew up as a Unix geek, so I see nothing wrong with the command line prompt. But for a lot of people, that text box was a very mysterious thing for them, you know, in a GUI world especially.
Yeah.
But in any case. Okay, so last two items, we each have an app pick. I'll go first. My app pick is actually Apple's app pick for this week in iTunes. And it is an app called Brushstroke, singular, Brushstroke. For both iPad and iPhone, it is great. It is, you know, there's a lot of apps out there that makes your photo look like a painting or drawing of some kind, but this one is really good, and I've tried a bunch of them. It is free. There is a 99-cent illustrations add-on pack, which does the drawing aspect versus painting. And although I rarely buy these add-ins, I spent a whole 99 cents of my hard-earned money to buy this add-in pack, and it is great too. So I heartily recommend Brushstroke for iOS, which is free. It's Apple's iTunes pick of the week this week, and the 99-cent illustration add-on pack. I've been having a lot of fun with it. John, yours?
I am, as we speak, going to download Brushstroke to play with it, because I am a big fan of those sorts of apps as well.
Yeah.
So my pick, so recently I've had to do a lot of reading in the last couple weeks because just work has given me much more to read than I usually have to and some other things I've signed up for. And I looked into this product that I found out about 6 months ago. It's called Spritz, Spritz. Now, Spritz is not its own product. It's actually a service that app users or app developers can add in for speed reading in their apps. So if you go to Spritz's website, which is just Spritz, spritzinc.com, so it's Spritz Inc., you can play around with this. And it lets you read. I find that I can comfortably read at about 1,000 words per minute.
Wow.
Using Spritz. And there are several apps on iOS and Android that have built-in Spritz technology into their apps. You can speed read through articles that you've clipped from things like Pocket Readability, speed read through EPUB books, that sort of thing. And there's a website where you can do it completely for free. You just paste in a giant block of text and it will Spritz it for you. Now, the nice thing about Spritz, the thing that makes them a bit different from other speed reading apps is that they've actually put a little bit of time into understanding where your eyes fixate when reading, and so they have a focal point that is about 40% into the word. And that focal point is kind of their secret sauce that allows you to get through the material quickly. So Spritz is my pick of the week. It's not a single app, so don't try just searching for Spritz. But if you go to their website, and we can put a link with the show notes online, you will find what apps have Spritz in them, and you can play around with it on their website. And it's a pretty cool piece of technology.
Is there any cost associated with using this?
The apps themselves cost a little bit here and there, so they're, you know, $1, $2 apps. The online interface is completely free. They do ask that you sign up with a free account with them to access the higher words per minute speeds. So if you want to go above 450 words per minute, you just create an account. And I assume that's because they just want to get some analytic data on who's using it and what speeds people like and that sort of thing. It's a lot easier if you can tie to an individual user. So I think it's a perfectly fair deal they're making and a lot of fun to play with, and it will definitely let you move through things much quicker and still get the exact same message that you would normally get on them.
Okay. So Spritz, speed reading. Got it. Okay, a couple of things that John and I were going to talk about, but we're kind of out of time, so I'll just run through them real quick so people know about them. First one is probably you've seen it. If you go to iTunes and either on the web on the web, an iTunes app on OS X or your iPhone or iPad, you'll see they have a kind of a best of 2014 list. You might want to check that out. Google Play, if you have an Android, has the same thing. They have a best of 2014 for their various products, so you can check that out on there, and I'll put a link in a show note. They also have a infographic on favorite apps, games, and movies, so I'll put all that in. A couple of other things, all googly, is there's a new Google app for iOS, and I was kind of surprised because it looks like it's using the Materials UI design on iOS, and I'm a little surprised Apple allowed that to go through. And like all other apps, it is losing its user interface. You have no idea what it's doing half the time. Chromecast, which is the we discussed earlier, the Google's Chromecast hardware that allows you to watch video cast from your PC or mobile device, has a guest mode so that if somebody comes to visit you, they don't need to log into your Wi-Fi access point. So you don't need to tell them the password to your Wi-Fi access home network for them cast to your TV. I have not tried this, but sounds like a good idea. And two final things, Android only. Hulu is allowing you to watch full seasons of some TV shows for free during the holiday season. So if you need to catch up on some shows and you have an Android device of some kind, try Hulu Plus out. I don't think you need to create a paid account, which is why you can watch for free. So I haven't tried it myself. And finally, on free, if you do not, for some reason, have the first Lord of the Rings movie, it is also available for free on Google Play right now. And you can grab that absolutely free of charge and watch it either via YouTube on your web browser or one of the Google Play video apps for iOS or Android. So that's the quick rundown of stuff we're going to talk about, but we just talked about other stuff instead.
And I would like to say, since this is our last podcast of the year, I've very much enjoyed being your regular guest this year. I will continue on as long as you'll have me, Todd.
But, thank you.
It has been about a year now that I've been doing this podcast on a semi-weekly basis.
Yeah. I really want to thank you, for being willing to put up with me on a weekly basis, because I know this takes, your time to do. So I really do appreciate it. And especially when we were trying out that video stuff, which quite honestly, I thought was just too much work. But thank you for your work on testing on that idea, at least. And maybe we'll return to it someday when I feel less lazy. But that was it's been a lot of fun. And it's been nice to do Mobile Views podcast regularly. I know it was kind of semi-regular previously. And in fact, I think there was a stretch for about a year when I didn't do one at all. So it's been really nice to do this regularly. It's certainly a lot easier than writing a blog, although I need to go do that sometime soon. And so this is Mobile Views Podcast number 105, Todd Agassiz-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. Last podcast for this year. We will talk to you next year. Have a happy holiday, whichever one you happen to celebrate. And what's the one from Seinfeld? Festivus. Merry Festivus. If you don't have any particular holiday,
and if you're just contrarian and don't like holidays in general, then don't have a holiday.
Yeah. Have a Christmas.
have whatever you'd like.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be merry or anything. Just have one.
Yeah.
So we'll see you next year. Have a great 2015. We'll see you then.